Should we even bother giving a secular argument for what we believe about marriage and family, or do we just quote the Bible?
It's time for The Line of Fire with your host, activist, author, international speaker, and theologian, Dr. Michael Brown, your voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution. Michael Brown is the director of the Coalition of Conscience and president of Fire School of Ministry. Get into The Line of Fire now by calling 866-34-TRUTH. That's 866-34-TRUTH. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
Welcome, friends, to The Line of Fire. This is Michael Brown, your voice of moral sanity and spiritual clarity in the midst of a society in chaos and a church all too often in compromise. My joy to be with you. It's a day to equip and strengthen and encourage you. 866-34-TRUTH, 866-348-7884. In a few minutes, I'll be speaking with Ryan Anderson, who is a young scholar dealing with marriage and family issues on the front lines. We'll have a very interesting and edifying conversation. Phone lines are open if you've got questions you'd like to ask. 866-348-7884. Yes, historic agreement signed between America and Iran. Congress is going to have to ratify it. From what I've heard, I really hope Congress will not ratify it. I'll be talking about that in the second hour. And if you don't get the second hour on your radio stations, which many of you will not, then just go to my website later today. You can catch up with the whole broadcast. Subscribe free on podcasts. It's AskDrBrown, askdrbrown.org. While you're there, check out latest articles as well. And we've posted a video on our Facebook page. I'm just going to take a look now. That's on Ask Dr. Brown on Facebook. Posted a video. Planned Parenthood director caught on tape selling aborted baby parts. And then we have a link where you can watch it on YouTube. I looked at it about a half an hour ago, and it had reached about 165,000 people. I asked my producer, Matt, just a few minutes ago, hey, take a look. How many people has it reached now, this video? In other words, it's being shared, and you share it with your audience, and it reaches more. And he said it's 270,000. That was just right before the show. I looked at it now, 330,000 plus. This is going completely viral. Oh, gosh. You've got to watch it, friends. This is some of the evil that we are dealing with. This is some of the ungodliness of the society. And I want to present something to you. When we give pro-life arguments to the world, and by the way, this is with undercover camera, all right? So we've got excerpts of this video. LifeSite News has the full video. We've got excerpts that you can watch. But when we give arguments for pro-life, we don't just give biblical arguments and say the Bible says this, the Bible says that. I'm all for using Scripture all the time. But we're dealing with the world and with people who don't accept the authority of Scripture or who don't believe in God at all. We also need to show why God's ways are ways of life, why God's ways are best. So when it comes to the argument against abortion, we don't only quote Scripture and say, well, the Bible gives us this indication, the Bible gives us that indication, the psalmist said that he was knit together in his mother's womb, and all of the verses we can use to show the humanity of the child in the womb. We also show pictures of ultrasounds, right? In other words, we say, look at these pictures. Look at these pictures. I think it's something like 75% of women who are considering abortion but have an ultrasound and see their baby first. When they do that, they end up not having an abortion. So we show them those pictures to say that's a real child in the womb, to appeal to their conscience. We can do that with all of the things that we stand for in terms of morality because we have a pro-life, pro-family, pro-health message. We'll be right back. 866-34-TRUTH. Change the world.
It's The Line of Fire with your host, Dr. Michael Brown, your voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
Welcome back, friends, to The Line of Fire, your listener-sponsored voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution. In my new book, Outlasting the Gay Revolution, which comes out in September, one of the endnotes, I am listing the most important recent books on marriage and family. Then I have a special note, and I recommend that my listeners and readers follow Ryan Anderson on Twitter. I actually have his Twitter handle in the endnote as the key person to follow for relevant articles, relevant thinking about the issue of marriage. His new book, just out, Truth Overruled, The Future of Marriage and Religious Freedom. And best of all, Ryan is not just a scholar with a PhD, but he is a young scholar. So this is key for the current debate. He researches and writes about marriage and religious liberty as the William E. Simon Senior Research Fellow in American Principles and Public Policy. Hey, Ryan, great to have you on The Line of Fire.
Thank you. Happy to be with you.
Let me play the devil's advocate and throw some things out to you. First, do we throw in the towel now? Do we accept that culture has moved on, that the inevitable shift has come, that the ship has sailed, the Supreme Court has ruled, the culture, the polls all tell us, especially the younger generation, things have shifted in terms of marriage, in terms of this culture war, best to throw in the towel. What do you think of that?
I think that's a terrible argument. And I think that's exactly what all of the elites were telling pro-lifers 42 years ago after Roe v. Wade. And pro-lifers were in a very similar situation 42 years ago. The court had just struck down abortion laws in all 50 states. Young people were in favor of abortion, and all of the intelligentsia, all of the liberal secular elites were in favor of abortion. And yet now, 42 years later, my generation is more pro-life than my parents' generation, and a majority of Americans identify as pro-life. Why? Because the pro-lifers of the previous generation did the hard work. And so what I do in this new book is I say, look, the Supreme Court has overruled the truth, but the future of marriage and religious freedom will depend on what we do in response. The left wants to say that people like you and me are the functional equivalent of racists and bigots, and that the law should treat us that way. We know that the view that we have about marriage is the truth of the matter, and that we now need to defend our right to bear witness to the truth. And this book is really a user's manual. It's a roadmap on how to do that. You know, it explains what marriage is and why it matters. It explains why the Supreme Court got those cases wrong 3 weeks ago. It explains what we do now. How do we, one, protect our freedom, but also how do we rebuild a strong marriage culture? What are the arguments? What are the voices? Who are the voices? Who are the spokespeople? That's what we need to be doing now.
All right. I'm with you. I'll continue to play devil's advocate. I wrote a thank you letter to Justice Kennedy after the ruling, a sarcastic one. And my first point was, thank you for galvanizing our side of the movement here, just as Roe v. Wade galvanized things back in 73. Because again, the pro-life movement was fragmented, discouraged at that point. Look at how changes have come. But back to devil's advocate, Ryan. What's the use of bringing a secular argument? Ultimately, the only people who are going to accept the fact that marriage is a union of a man and woman are Bible believers, are conservative Christians and Jews, those who have a biblical worldview. You're wasting your time going to college campuses, going on secular TV, and giving a secular argument because no one's going to listen to a secular argument. No one's even thinking these days.
Well, so two responses to that. First is that philosophy is true for believers as well. So Christians need to know the truth about both faith and reason. Christians need to know the truth about both theology and philosophy, the truth about scripture and social science. It's not as if the only truth that is God's truth is revealed truth. Natural truths are God's truths as well. So we need to be taking our intellect seriously. So that's point one. Point two, though, is that I was an undergraduate at Princeton University. Most of my classmates at Princeton disagree with me about abortion. They're pro-choice and I'm pro-life. But precisely because they understand why I'm pro-life, even though they disagree with me, they understand what makes me concerned about the unborn child. That's what makes them willing to tolerate me and to respect my freedom. Most of my classmates at Princeton don't understand why we believe what we believe about marriage. And it's precisely because they don't understand it that they think they have to silence us. And if the Westboro Baptist Church is the only voice they've ever heard, they're going to continue to think that, you know, these conservatives are really nasty people with backward beliefs about marriage, and we need to have the law silence them. We need to explain to our secular liberal neighbors why we believe what we believe. So even if they disagree with us, they will at least respect our freedom and respect our rights to run our schools and our charities and our businesses in accordance with our beliefs.
All right, so not playing the devil's advocate here, Ryan, how do we overcome the demonizing? I have very carefully, with academic soundness, with gentleness of tone for years now, addressed issues, be it on radio, be it on a college campus, a public debate, or different setting. And nonetheless, I'm demonized in the harshest of terms. I'm on the hit list of these different groups. And I understand it's part of the strategy and part of the gut-level reaction that the moment you disagree, the moment you differ, you're going to be branded Nazi, KKK, hater, bigot. Obviously, I want to overcome evil with good, to use a biblical perspective, and continue to put forth in the Martin Luther King philosophy, hatred can't drive out hatred, so we've got to take the opposite stance. But how does one do that successfully? What kind of positive results have you had? Because you're on many college campuses in many hostile environments. Do people actually change their tone towards you?
Yes. I mean, so I would say the most important thing is ignore the haters. Ignore the internet trolls, ignore the people who are leaving the unhinged comments and saying the most outrageous thing about you. Those aren't the people you're trying to reach.
Got it.
What we have to recognize is that there are activists on the left who are not representative of ordinary Americans on the left. So ordinary Americans disagree with you and me, but they don't think that you and I are Hitler. It's only the activists that say that you and I are Hitler. And so to a certain extent, I retweet some of the most outrageous stuff I get precisely to show the fair-minded, open-minded, reasonable, tolerant liberals how outrageous their own activists are. Mm-hmm. And I think to a certain extent, when I go to a college campus, you know, I've spoken at Harvard Law School and Yale Law School just this past semester. And my goal there is to reach the middle-of-the-road liberal, not the hardcore activist liberal, and to say to them, look, you can disagree with me, but can we be civil? Can we agree to disagree? Can we respect each other? Can we tolerate each other? Or are you really going to shut down every Christian school in America, take away their nonprofit tax status, take away their accreditation? Do you really need to do that? And what I found is that when you're speaking to ordinary Americans, they're willing to say, wow, I've never considered those arguments. Because so many of them, I know from my own experience when I was a student at Princeton, people have never heard a philosophical or a social science argument, a natural argument, about marriage as the union of a man and a woman. So what I try to do in this new book is equip all of my readers to be able to articulate the law that's written on their heart using secular arguments so that they can then explain to their secular neighbors, their secular colleagues at work, maybe their children, whoever, they can explain it in an idiom that's accessible to those people.
All right, the new book, Truth Overruled, The Future of Marriage and Religious Freedom, Ryan T. Anderson, published by Regnery Books, just hot off the press. I've been looking at excerpts from it, and I can say candidly, it is exactly what we need, and I couldn't think of a better person than Ryan to write it. So, Ryan, let's just press in a little deeper. The younger generation, which is so used to soundbiting things, which is so used to just retweeting rather than thinking critically, which is so heavily influenced by the media and which so overwhelmingly supports redefining marriage, how do we reach this younger generation?
Well, I mean, partly we really need to help them take a step back and reconsider the past 40 or 50 years of American family life. I mean, because the concern here is not just gay marriage. And that's one of the things that I stress over and over again in this book is that same-sex marriage is a symptom of the larger problem. The larger problem is 1968. The larger problem is the sexual revolution.
Yes, sir.
Kennedy can only legally redefine marriage after 40-some years of heterosexuals failing to live out the truth about marriage. And frequently it's been churches failing to teach the truth about marriage. So we have a lot of work to do just to simply shore up our own community and explain what is wrong with the hookup culture. What's wrong with premarital sex? What's wrong with non-marital childbearing? What's wrong with no-fault divorce? How have all of these revisions to marriage undermined the essential rationale? What is marriage about? It's a comprehensive union where a man and a woman unite as one flesh, and then they commit to live by certain norms, monogamy, exclusivity, permanency, precisely because a one-flesh union that unites a man and a woman also has the capacity to create new flesh, has the capacity to create new life, and then unite that new life with a mother and a father. And it's only when you ignore all of those basic biological realities of human life that you could say, oh, it actually doesn't matter, that marriage right. is just about consenting adult love, whatever size or shape it comes in.
Yeah, absolutely. Again, friends, the book, Truth Overruled, The Future of Marriage and Religious Freedom. Hey, Ryan, I just want to grab you for about two more minutes after the break to ask you a follow-up question to challenge some of these things. And I've got a whole chapter in my book, Outlasting the Gay Revolution, which will come out in September, saying exactly what Ryan just said, that redefining marriage is part of the larger culture of sexual anarchy, and that sexual purity will trump sexual anarchy.
The Line of Fire with your host, Dr. Michael Brown, your voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
Hey, friends, one of the best sources for you online dealing with marriage, family, gender, these kinds of issues, The Public Discourse. It is edited by my guest. He's founder and editor Ryan Anderson. A few years ago when I was on Tyra Banks, I consulted Dr. Paul McHugh about transgender children before going on the air. He gave me a fabulous quote. Well, an article he wrote for The Public Discourse after the whole Bruce/Caitlyn Jenner affair has gone viral there. And it's a great resource. They're academically sound articles, but written in a way that everyone can understand. So that's thepublicdiscourse.com. And my guest, Ryan T. Anderson, his brand new book, Truth Overruled, The Future of Marriage and Religious Freedom. It is as practical as it is compelling. So, Ryan, real quick, I know you hear these questions day and night, but your average person doesn't know how to respond. So I'm going to just throw a few things out. Give me the soundbite answer. Love is love. I have the right to marry the one I love.
Sure. Marriage isn't simply about consenting adult love, or else every consenting adult relationship would be a marriage. Marriage is about the type of relationship that can unite a man and a woman as husband and wife to then be mother and father to any children that their union creates.
But what about an infertile couple or an old couple? Should they be banned from marrying?
Of course not. No one has ever suggested that. Not every marriage will produce a child, but every child has both a mother and a father, and marriage is about maximizing the likelihood that every child will be raised by their mother and their father.
But look, this is not a theocracy, Ryan. You have no business imposing your religious views on everyone else in the nation.
This has nothing to do with about religion. This has to do with human nature. And as Plato and Aristotle and Cicero and Immanuel Kant and John Locke taught us, the two halves of humanity, male and female, come together in marriage precisely to do the great, important secular and civil work of creating the next generation and then raising the next generation to be law-abiding members of society. That's a civic argument, not a religious argument.
All right, last question. But if we are in a situation now where there's so much conflict over this and the religious people are having such conflict, why doesn't the government just get out of marriage entirely and just leave it to religious institutions?
Your church can marry you. Your church can't divorce you. Your church can't enforce alimony payments or child support payments. This is why the political community has been in the marriage business in more or less every society we know of. Marriage is both a natural institution and a supernatural institution. It's both a secular and a sacred institution. And so you need both the church and the state in the marriage business, and both of them need to be defining marriage correctly.
Yeah, loud and clear. Friends, you'll get a ton more information in the new book, Truth Overruled, The Future of Marriage and Religious Freedom. And Ryan, we're thrilled to have you on the front lines as a young scholar with your growing team, and I'm 100% with you. I'm fully expecting a turning of the tide by God's grace and through truth getting out there, and the fact that God's ways are best, and that's why society's based on them. When we depart from them, we do it to our own harm. Thanks for taking time to join us today.
Thank you.
All right. 866-34-TRUTH if you have a comment or a question to add in. Oh, I didn't want to crumple that paper. Oh, hey, I'll crumple it. Started to? There we go. Crumpled. since I don't need the text for introducing Ryan any further. So I had this on my desk yesterday. And I didn't get to it. But I'm reading a fascinating book by Professor Paul Kengor. He was on the air with us once. He's a professor at, is it Grove City College, Christian school. But he's a best-selling author. He's written a lot about communism. He's written about President Reagan, different things. And he's got a book out, Takedown, From Communist to Progressive, How the Left Has Sabotaged Family and Marriage. And I was reading part of it, and then I just flipped open to another chapter, and it was about Bishop Fulton Sheen. Bishop Fulton Sheen. I remember seeing him as a boy on TV, the very, very popular Catholic bishop who was a television phenom. He was also a brilliant man. He was highly educated, fluent in multiple languages. I did not realize the degree to which he took on communism. I did not realize that until I was reading this book by Paul Kengor. And he mentioned two best-selling books that Sheen wrote, 48, 49, which would have been before my time anyway, Communism and the Conscience of the West and Peace of Soul. I actually went online to look at some of Fulton Sheen's messages. There's one where he gives an illustration that while he was speaking, a baby started crying and the mother got up to take the child out. And Fulton Sheen said to the mother, you can stay. The child is not bothering me. And the mother looked at him and said, you're bothering the child. Anyway, what's fascinating is how pro-abortion, pro-divorce communist Russia became under Stalin. And how Stalin actually had to try to reverse this because it was literally killing off the culture, the nation. Look at this. As a result of the rise of communism, according to Sheen's data, in 1934, there were 154,000 abortions versus 57,000 births. So that's basically a 3-to-1 ratio of abortions to births. In surrounding villages that year, there were 324,194 abortions versus 242,979 births. And then divorce, absolutely rampant. Stalin had to try to fight against abortion and divorce because it was ultimately going to be decimating the next culture. And Soviet Union, Russia still haven't recovered, and abortion is still rampant, etc. I'll get into that a little bit more. But friends, I was so excited to be able to announce this yesterday. I was really, really pumped to be able to announce this yesterday. We are now taking orders for the first edition, the very first printing of my book, Outlasting the Gay Revolution, Where Homosexual Activism is Really Going and How to Turn the Tide. It will fill you with hope, with courage, and with strategy for the long haul. Unless Jesus returns first, I believe we'll see how the gay revolution has within itself the seeds of self-destruction and how we can outlast it by following biblical, godly principles. You'll be edified, you'll be challenged, you'll be encouraged, you'll be informed. It's a beautiful hardcover, right under 300 pages. And the first printing we get in, we've done this the last few books, and it's been really popular and something I really enjoy doing. The first printing comes in, they get numbered. So they're beautifully numbered, number one, number five, number 30, number whatever it is. We'll do 100, or if demand is there, 200, even 300, but we only do it with the first printing. Each one is numbered, and then I'll sign them with a scripture reference for you, all right? $50 postage paid. So it's kind of a collector's item special thing that we do that's been a blessing to our listeners. You've come up to me face-to-face in different countries and in America to thank me, to tell me which number you have. And it's a way that you can stand with us and bless us and help us as we are on the front lines of this counterculture Jesus revolution. Call us at 1-800-278-9978. 1-800-278-9978. Let me give you that number one more time. Earlier you call, better number you get. 1-800-278-9978. To find out more, go to my website, askdrbrown.org, askdrbrown.org. You'll see a video there that'll tell you more.
It's The Line of Fire with your host, activist, author, international speaker, and theologian, Dr. Michael Brown. Your voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution. Get into The Line of Fire now by calling 866-34-TRUTH. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
Welcome back, friends, to The Line of Fire, 866-34-TRUTH. Great talking with Ryan Anderson. And just check on Twitter for Ryan T. Anderson. You'd want to follow him there. He's always putting out good quotes and good links and things that you'll find very, very helpful. And a new book coming out that I just mentioned as well. Second hour today, I'm going to be talking about the deal with Iran, good deal or bad deal, and how we should respond to it. And I want to talk to you about communism and the family in a little while. This is going to make sense and come together for you. But first, I'm going to grab a phone call. Fairfax, Virginia. Zechariah, welcome to The Line of Fire.
Well, thank you so much, Dr. Brown. I've been listening to you, and I'm a first-time caller. My question to you is, in the book of Enoch, it talks about how man, his wickedness just continued to grow, and women were marrying women, and men were marrying women. I mean, when men were marrying men, and they were basically just throwing it in God's face. And Jesus said, you know, that we would be like, the last days would be like that generation. We'd be eating and drinking, marriage and giving in marriage. Are we now with this Oakland proclamation, okay, that this is what marriage is, we're defining what marriage is, and the church is accepting it, and it's now being pushed all throughout the world. Even in Rome's wickedest times, they never, ever proclaimed that homosexuality was to be considered marriage. I mean, yeah, they had to try and prostitutes and everything like this, but we have gotten to a point in time where our wickedness is equal to the wickedness before the flood.
Yeah,
are we expecting any day that Christ could be coming back with judgment?
Right. An important question, and one that I'm often asked. Actually, it's not the Book of Enoch that mentions in the ancient world men marrying men or women marrying women. There is other ancient rabbinic literature. Book of Enoch is not rabbinic literature, but there is literature from the 2nd and 3rd century. I actually cited in my new book, Outlasting the Gay Revolution, but there is literature in the 2nd and 3rd century that does talk about in the days before the flood that men were marrying men, etc. Now, is that an accurate tradition that was passed on through the centuries? That would be fascinating if so. Is it something that the ancient rabbis witnessed in their own day and projected back on the days of the flood? That would be another question. What we do know is in the days before the flood that there was tremendous violence in the earth and that the human race was destroying itself. And if God did not intervene, then there would have been no human race left. We also know there are other perversions that were taking place based on what Genesis 6 records. Here's the question. Here's the real question, Zechariah. When Jesus says, as the days of Noah were, so the Son of Man, the coming of the Son of Man will be, for in those days before the flood, they were eating and drinking, marrying and giving in marriage until the day Noah boarded the ark. They didn't know until the flood came and swept them all away. So this is the way the coming of the Son of Man will be. In other words, when it says, as it was in the days of Noah, doesn't mean the same level of wickedness, the same level of sin, the same level of apostasy. Well, if so, we're nowhere near it because there are only 8 godly people that God found on the earth, and really one, Noah, the head of his family, was the key one. We have countless godly people all around the earth who fear God and all around America who fear God and are seeking his face. But it could well be saying, and the way I had taken it through the years is, that just as in Noah's day, people didn't believe the warnings, and they were going on living normal life until the judgment came, until the rains came and Noah entered the ark, that it will be the same. It will be the same. People won't believe the warnings. They won't heed. They'll be living their lives right up until Jesus returns. Thank you for the question, sir.
It's The Line of Fire with your host, Dr. Michael Brown. Get into The Line of Fire now by calling 866-34-TRUTH. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
God's ways are ways of life. God's ways work. God's ways produce lasting fruit. This is Michael Brown. You are listening to The Line of Fire, 866-34-TRUTH, 866-348-7884. Someone challenged me on Twitter the other day and said, why are you trying to impose your biblical views on others? These are secular laws. Well, the idea of the laws of America being secular laws would be a bit of a foreign concept to the founders, who were not all Christian men or not all religious men, but certainly, with rare exception, did believe in a creator God who gave human beings rights and liberties. In other words, law was not totally secular. Our Constitution was not totally secular, right? We understand that as a premise. And the Bible was the most quoted document by far in the letters of the founding fathers and in their documents where they were dealing with law issues and in their various writings. The Bible was the most quoted book by far beyond other law books, meaning that there was an understanding of the wisdom of God and of the wisdom of Scripture. And one reason that people went to school in early America was to be able to read the Bible. So the idea that the society is just secular is a misconception. That being said, no, we are not a theocracy. We're absolutely not a theocracy. There is not a state religion that is imposed on everyone that everyone must keep, and with penalties if they do not keep that. So why then do we seek to bring biblical arguments and push those biblical arguments on the society as a whole? Again, I wouldn't look at it like that. That's how critics would put that to us. But the way I would look at it is this. I would say that we live in a democratic republic. This is a democracy. And an atheist, a Buddhist, a Hindu, a religious Jew, a religious Muslim, a secular Jew, a secular Catholic, a religious Christian, whoever, everybody has an equal right to vote for what they think is right and to advocate for what they think is right, as long as it doesn't fundamentally violate the law. In other words, no one has the right to advocate murder of a certain group of people. Well, that's their right. No. That is advocating for something illegal. But you can advocate for certain laws to be changed then. You can say, well, you know, we should outlaw alcoholism, outlaw the distribution of alcohol. Or we should legalize pot. I mean, people can advocate, and then ultimately there's going to be voting on it. There's ultimately going to be voting on it, and then you get the right people in office, and then you get certain laws enacted or not enacted. So if you believe that marriage should be the union of any number of consenting adults, then by all means, you can vote for that. And you, if you're an elected official, you can advocate for that. And you can stand up before Congress and give your arguments. And if you're the president of the United States, you can say, this is what I stand for. And you can appoint justices accordingly. That's how it works. And I can say marriage has always been and needs to continue to be the union of a man and a woman. Let me explain why. And then we seek to get that viewpoint across and seek to change people's thinking in that regard so that they now embrace marriage and family as God intended it to be, and as society has always functioned. But what's important to remember, and as came up in the first half hour of my interview with Ryan Anderson, this is not merely a religious argument that we're bringing, because God's ways work. Now, the preaching of the cross for salvation is going to be foolishness to some people. And the idea of just a God who exists is going to be foolishness to some people. And the idea that this ancient book is actually God's word and we live by it, that's going to be foolishness to some people. We understand that. Nonetheless, God's ways bring life. When you go through the book of Proverbs, yes, God appears in the book of Proverbs. God is mentioned in the book of Proverbs. But Proverbs is primarily giving divine wisdom for practical life that works for everybody. In other words, if you're an atheist, and as much as possible, you live by the wisdom of Proverbs. So Proverbs 1:10, my son, if sinners entice you, don't be persuaded. If they say, come with us, let's set an ambush and kill someone, let's attack some innocent person just for fun, let's swallow them alive like Sheol, still healthy as they go down to the pit. We'll find all kinds of valuable property and fill our houses with plunder. Throw in your lot with us and we'll all share our money. If you as an atheist, listen to the wisdom of Proverbs. My son, don't travel that road with them or set foot on their path because their feet run toward trouble and they hurry to commit murder. It is foolish to spread a net where any bird can see it, but they set an ambush to kill themselves. They attack their own lives. Such are the paths of all who make profit dishonestly. It takes the lives of those who receive it. If you as an atheist say, you know, it makes sense not to hang with those people. I look statistically and I see the people that are running in gangs and the people that are dealing drugs and the people that are stealing and killing, a high percentage of them end up in prison, or a high percentage of them end up strung out on drugs, or a high percentage of them end up wounded or dead, and I don't want any of those options, therefore I won't do it. Yeah, God's ways are ways of life. You have two people. Both atheists, no thought of God in their lives. One of them is a heavy alcoholic and dies of cirrhosis of the liver at the age of 45. The other, every so often, has a glass of wine with a meal, but never more than two, and has never been drunk one day in his life. He doesn't get cirrhosis of the liver. Why? Because God's ways are ways of life. Here, Nancy and I have been discussing how interesting it is that basically the foods that are man-made, the more that we get a hand in it, the less healthy they are. And the more natural things are, the healthier they are. It doesn't mean that you're bulletproof if you eat in a healthy way. But for example, you have two people, two Hindus, all right? One of them for breakfast has a healthy juice drink or a healthy smoothie. The other for breakfast has pancakes and bacon and eggs and I don't know, a few other things thrown in there. And over a period of 5 years, one will be healthier than the other. All things being equal, one will be heavier. One will have more clogged arteries, but you know, over 10 years or however long it's going to take, just because of the natural process of one eating something that's healthier and the other's unhealthier. What I'm saying to you, friends, and I want you to drink this in, to take this in to the very core of your being, God's ways are healthy. Oh, yeah, we may die as martyrs for the gospel. We may suffer and be in prison for the gospel. We may endure hardship for the gospel. But I'm saying the principles by which we live, a committed marriage, a committed family, a man devoted to his wife and a wife devoted to her husband, living in sexual purity, not cheating, not fooling around with others, not having multiple relations outside of wedlock, faithful to each other, raising their children together, not addicted to cigarettes, not addicted to pornography, not addicted to alcohol, not addicted to other destructive things. They raise their children. Their children are raised in a certain environment. Their children have children. You cycle this through over a period of generations, friends. You cycle this through over a period of generations, and you will see consistently, overall, on average, healthier families, healthier individuals, less crises, less breakdowns along the way. Now, there are children of alcoholics that have become world changers. There are children from multiple divorced homes that are exceptional. My wife, Nancy, came from a home where her mother was married four times, and you'll never find a more loyal wife and mother. My son-in-law, Jimmy, came from a home where his mom was married five times, and you'll not find a more devoted husband and father than Jimmy. I mean, they're... In other words, you go through certain things, and it's not to say that the parents were evil, that whatever, different situations, maybe wrong choices made. But the point of the matter is, you can grow up with adversity and challenge and be exemplary in many, many ways. As much as I despise many of President Obama's policies, talk about an achiever raised in a broken home, that man's an achiever. I profoundly differ with his many of his policies and moral choices, but that man is an achiever. He's become the president of the United States, one of the most influential human beings on the planet. But all things being equal, you plot out 10,000 families, you look at 100,000 children, you look at it over a period of years, those raised with committed moms and dads in a morally pure environment will excel far, far, far beyond those raised in broken homes in a morally compromised environment. God's ways are healthy. God's ways are life. I want to talk to you a bit more about communism in the family. And then our real weapons in taking on this fallen culture.
Line of Fire with your host, Dr. Michael Brown. Get into the Line of Fire now by calling 866-34-TRUTH. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
Yeah, I just tweeted this out. If you're following me on Twitter, and again, it's posted on our Ask Dr. Brown Facebook page, AskDR Brown. Thankfully, this message is getting out. Video, Planned Parenthood director, speaks of selling the baby parts of aborted babies. I updated you just a few minutes ago in terms of how many people it reached on our Facebook page. It just exploded, 565,000, been viewed over 108,000 times. That's just since, how long ago? 3 hours. And it's so important to get this out. So important. You say, what can I do? Share it. Share it. If you're on Twitter, retweet it. Help spread this message. Thank God for this undercover video exposing something absolutely horrific, ugly, and dangerous. So back to communism and Fulton Sheen from Paul Kengor's book, Takedown, from Communists to Progressives, How the Left Has Sabotaged Family and Marriage. So what Fulton Sheen did was he took on communism on his own terms and showed how it ultimately had to fail. Quote, the truth on the subject is that communism and atheism are intrinsically related and that one cannot be a good communist without being an atheist. And every atheist is a potential communist. Bishop Sheen quoted from a French edition of a Marx document and translated it, communism begins where atheism begins. And Sheen's dedication said, it is not Christian to wish for the extinction of communists, though it is most Christian to pray for the evaporation of communism. And again, there was basically a war on family, a war on marriage, a war on reproduction. You say, but how possibly could you think that you're going to survive long term? Well, there was no wisdom in it. It was an anti-wisdom principle. The idea of women being at home to raise children was considered a negative. They should be part of this egalitarian workforce. And Sheen quoted a statement from 1935 that equated women's labor, a vaunted concept, not with housework, but strictly with factory work. The Bolshevik regime boasted that during Stalin's first of his hideous five-year plans, there had been an estimated 6 million housewives in nearby Moscow towns. In an almost militaristic sense, these women were considered reserves for factory production in the revolution. Said the statement, all the local communist organizations received orders to call up the reserves, the housewives, and attach them to production, meaning factory work. They're wasting their time being at home with the children. Here's a statement from 1936. The Soviet Commission of Jurists and Sociologists in April of 36, when they realized, wait, we got a big problem. Too many abortions, too many divorces, not enough families producing children. Big problem. Look at the statement they put out in April 1936. Professor Kengor says it's an almost hilarious irony. The Soviet woman is the equal of man, but she is not dispensed from the great duty which nature has conferred about her, namely that of motherhood. Her health is double precious, first as a human being, then as a mother. It added, abortion is inadmissible. Hang on! They were totally pro-abortion. They were massively pro-abortion. Again, stats I gave a moment ago, earlier in the broadcast, that in Moscow in 1934, according to Bishop Sheen's data, Fulton Sheen, there were 154,000 abortions versus 57,000 births. Almost 3-to-1 ratio of abortions to live births. You can't live like that. You cannot have society going on like that in any way, shape, size, or form. So they had to try to reverse policy. Look at this. By 1955, Stalin's successor, Nikita Khrushchev, reconstituted legal abortion. By 1958, there were 5 million abortions per year in the Soviet Union. By 1965, abortions peaked at 8.2 million, dwarfing the worst years in America's post-Roe v. Wade. By 1970, some 3,000 full-time abortion doctors were performing roughly 7.2 million abortions per year. By the 1980s, Soviet citizens comprised 5 to 6% of the world's population, but 25% of the world's abortions. In other words, communism kills itself, just as the pro-abortion movement does, and just as gay activism will ultimately undermine itself. So what do? We go back to the fundamentals, friends. On the one hand, we refuse to compromise our convictions. We refuse to go along with things that we believe are wrong, so we don't accept this new definition of marriage. We love everyone, but based on our convictions, we don't accept this new definition of marriage. But we spend our time primarily doing what God has given us to do, being witnesses, being people of prayer, preaching Jesus, living for God, making disciples, living holy lives, reaching out to the hurting, reaching out to the needy, talking about eternal judgment, talking about one true God, educating people in the scriptures, helping them to live radical counterculture lifestyles. As we do that, friends, by God's grace, we will make a lasting impact. As we do that, we will be world changers. And then we pray fervently for revival. We pray fervently for divine intervention and for God to bring an awakening to the church, beginning with each of us. I should say awakening to society, beginning with the church, beginning with each of us. All right, friends. Very excited this week, and this week only, that's our plan anyway, this week only, we are taking pre-orders now for our collector's edition, the first printing of my new book, Outlasting the Gay Revolution, Where Homosexual Activism is Really Going and How to Turn the Tide. Already, it's coming out in early September, but 2.5 months before it was going to be released, it was the number one title on Amazon and new releases in gay and lesbian activism. In other words, there's an interest in this book before it comes out. And when people hear about it or read excerpts, they're immediately infused with hope and courage and faith and grace in the midst of these cultural challenges. Outlasting the Gay Revolution, the very first printing, we number each book, whether it's the first 100, 200, 300, depends on the demand. We number them, so everyone hand-numbered, and then I sign them to you personally with a scripture reference. We do it just with the first printing. Of course, we sign books at book tables all the time, but this is the one that is the first printing and numbered and then signed. $50 postage paid. This is your way of getting something special, and I believe what will be one of the most important books you've read in a long time, and your way of standing with us and helping us on the front lines. If you appreciate what we're doing, this is a great way to partner together. So call right now. We've got folks standing by to take your calls. 1-800-278-9978. That's 1-800-278-9978. Or if it's easier, just go to the website, askdrbrown.org. You can order there. There's also a special video you can watch that'll tell you more. 1-800-278-9978. My bottom line, God's ways are healthy. God's ways are made for the long haul. Live by them, and you'll never have a regret. Well, America and other nations have made a historic agreement with Iran. Israel's saying it is a historic mistake. Who's right?
It's time for The Line of Fire with your host, activist, author, international speaker, and theologian, Dr. Michael Brown, your voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution. Michael Brown is the director of the Coalition of Conscience and president of Fire School of Ministry. Get into The Line of Fire now by calling 866-34-TRUTH. That's 866-34-TRUTH. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
I had another talk with the German Chancellor, Herr Hitler. And here is the paper which bears his name upon it as well as mine. We regard the agreement signed last night and the Anglo-German naval agreement as symbolic of the desire of our two peoples never to go to war with one another again.
All right. Gosh. The words of Neville Chamberlain as he was celebrating the, quote, historic agreement with Herr Hitler, Adolf Hitler, so that Germany and England would never go to war again. Oh, how do we look at those words today? I mean, isn't it painful just to hear them? Isn't it painful just to hear those words spoken at all in light of history? Yikes and ouch and what a horror. And how we contrast the words of Chamberlain with the leadership of Churchill. This is Michael Brown. You're listening to The Line of Fire. We play that clip because the United States and several of the nations have signed a nuclear agreement with Iran, which allegedly will stop Iran from getting a nuclear weapon. Clip number one, Joey, in President Obama's own words, this is a good deal. This is a historic deal. Secretary of State John Kerry has been working hard to broker this deal. This is what President Obama has to say.
After 2 years of negotiations, the United States, together with our international partners, has achieved something that decades of animosity has not. A comprehensive, long-term deal with Iran that will prevent it from obtaining a nuclear weapon.
That's what the president had to say. Prime Minister Netanyahu in Israel, a completely different take. Clip number two, he feels that this is a historic mistake, an historic mistake. Now, Secretary Kerry has shot back, not surprisingly, but I want to bring you some perspective on that. I'm not an expert on this. I'm simply going to share different perspectives. I don't believe that the United States is intentionally saying we're going to commit terrorist suicide and we're going to destroy Israel. No. But could you work so hard to do something to say, hey, we've got an agreement so it looks good, whereas in reality it's tragic? Listen to what Prime Minister Netanyahu had to say.
Our concern, of course, is that the militant Islamic State of Iran is going to receive a sure path to nuclear weapons. Many of the restrictions that were supposed to prevent it from getting there will be lifted. And in addition, Iran will get a jackpot, a cash bonanza of hundreds of billions of dollars, which will enable it to continue to pursue its aggression and terror in the region and in the world. This is a bad mistake of historic proportions.
A bad mistake of historic proportions. I want to share with you what some of the critics have to say. Just remember, only a couple days ago in Iran, they were burning Israeli and American flags, chanting death to Israel. I believe even burning images of President Obama in effigy or hanging him. And the Iranians are celebrating because they've been hit hard by sanctions. That's the argument. The sanctions have been working. Why now put billions of dollars in their hands by lifting the sanctions? Aside from nuclear weapons, they are a chief financier of terror in the Middle East. Why?
Cleansing flame, send the fire.
It's The Line of Fire with your host, Dr. Michael Brown, your voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
Thanks, friends, for joining us on The Line of Fire. The first hour, we talked about marriage issues. We talked about how to make an argument, not even using the Bible, but just about marriage, about family, about God's ways being ways of life. Of course, we use the Bible, Scripture for everything, but God's truth is truth. In other words, it's not just you have truth in the Bible and outside of the Bible, it's not true. No, God's truth is truth, and God's morality is moral, and God's principles of life, are life-giving, and therefore we hold to them in every area of life. Do you feel good about America's agreement with Iran? Have you listened to news? Have you listened to maybe liberal news, maybe your own perspective, and you feel good? You think this is a good thing we're doing, and we've made the right move to negotiate with Iran to enter into this nuclear agreement where allegedly we will stop them from getting a nuclear bomb? Or do you think we're making a big mistake? Do you think we're hurting Israel? Do you think there are consequences if we hurt Israel? Do you think there are consequences for America if we hurt Israel? Let's put this out another way. Who needs whom more? Does America need Israel more, or does Israel need America more? America certainly, Israel certainly needs America in many ways, naturally speaking. The amount of funds that are poured into Israel from America are of critical importance for Israel's defense and economy. If you pull American influence, American support out from Israel, that would be absolutely horrific. But ultimately, who needs whom more? Does America need Israel more, or does Israel need America more? What do you think? 866-34-TRUTH. Go down, Joey, to clip number 5. I want to again hear a little bit more from President Obama and from Prime Minister Netanyahu. I want to share an analysis from Daniel Pipes, Middle Eastern scholar and political authority. Obama's Iran deal has the makings of a catastrophe. Jewish press says peace for our time. Iran nuclear deal announced on Black Tuesday. There is a lot of uproar. Michael Oren writing for Time magazine, why Israel won't be celebrating the Iran deal. Israel says West has surrendered to Iran with nuclear deal. Reuters reporting that. On the Forward, another Jewish publication, fairly liberal, how Israel hopes to scuttle Iran deal. Remember, this has to be approved by Congress. Listen to President Obama speaking about it again. Number 5.
That's the deal. It has the full backing of the international community. Congress will now have an opportunity to review the details, and my administration stands ready to provide extensive briefings on how this will move forward.
All right. So the question is there something that the president knows, that Secretary of State Kerry knows, that these other nations know, that Prime Minister Netanyahu and others don't know? Hey, remember, there are Muslim countries like Saudi Arabia that are not happy with this. And they're saying, hey, time out. They're getting nuclear weapons. We're getting nuclear weapons. You say, no. This is to prevent them from getting nuclear weapons. Saudi Arabia say, no way. We don't like this deal. Why? Well, Saudi Arabia is Sunni Muslim. Iran is Shiite. They're in conflict. If you take a country like Syria, the Sunnis are backing one group and the Shiites are backing another group. If you take a country like Yemen, same thing, Sunnis versus Shiites. ISIS is Sunni. They're attacking Shiites and, of course, other Sunnis. I mean, they're attacking just about everybody. But a lot of the funding for a lot of terrorism in the Middle East comes from Iran. Even in other countries, it is exported. And when they have said, yes, death to Israel, yes, of course, when they've agreed to that and affirmed that, how in the world do you think you're going to now negotiate with them when we are still, in Iran's eyes, the great Satan and Israel is the little Satan? Secretary of State Kerry, according to Al Weaver reporting on the Daily Caller, Secretary of State John Kerry pushed back against criticism of the Iran deal from Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu, saying in an interview Tuesday that his comments are, quote, way over the top. Kerry also, or in fact, let's listen. Matt, just tell me when. We've got it. All right, let's listen to what Kerry had to say about this.
What do you say to Israel's prime minister?
Israel is safer.
An historic mistake, he said.
Well, he said the same thing about the interim agreement, and he was wrong. The fact is that he's practically been making comments that are way over the top. He doesn't even know what the concessions are that we have not engaged in, because we haven't made concessions. So there's a game here. You know, there's a process here. This is under attack by people who really don't know the terms of the agreement. And they don't offer an alternative. Their alternative is what? Perpetual state of sanctions? Not going to happen.
Wow. What a statement. What a statement. If you have someone that wants to get a nuclear bomb and might well use that nuclear bomb against you or against your allies, and the only solution is a perpetual state of sanctions to stop them from doing it, then you do that until they say, okay, we're not going to try anymore. We now fully give up on our pursuits. Then you lift the sanctions and you have it verifiable and testable. Why is that so hard to understand? Why is that not another solution? It is a solution. Senator, Secretary of State Kerry doesn't like it. Let me point out something else that he said there. Israel doesn't know. Well, why was Israel kept in the dark? What kind of deal is that? Israel is your most important ally in the region. Israel is your friend in the region. Why in the world shut Israel out? Israel doesn't know the arrangement we made. Congress is going to know it. Israel still doesn't know it. These other nations that have joined together are going to know it, and Israel doesn't know it. What kind of negotiations are those? What kind of friendship is that? And then, which is certainly a slip of the tongue, well, isn't Israel doesn't know the concessions that we haven't made because we didn't make them. I mean, I'm paraphrasing to illustrate what he said, but that was his point. Israel doesn't know the concessions we made because we didn't make concessions. Well, then why talk about the concessions we made if you didn't make them? All right. Let me go over to, I'll tell you what, let's hear from Prime Minister Netanyahu one more time. Clip number three, again, Prime Minister Netanyahu weighing in on this.
This deal is not built on trust.
All right, sorry, did I give you the wrong number? Number three? All right, tell you what, Joey, let's go down to clip number six. Clip number six, Prime Minister Netanyahu weighing in on the Iran deal.
As the American people and Congress...
All right, do we have, okay, looks like I've got these numbered wrong, Matt, so just got to check on that. Sorry about that. Okay, let me go over to Daniel Pipes. Daniel Pipes. You can read his stuff on danielpipes.org. Barack Obama has repeatedly signaled during the past 6.5 years that his number one priority in foreign affairs is not China, not Russia, not Mexico, but Iran. He wants to bring Iran in from the cold to transform the Islamic Republic into just another normal member of the so-called international community, ending decades of its aggression and hostility. In itself, Pipe says, this is a worthy goal. It's always good policy to reduce the number of enemies. It brings to mind Nixon going to China. The problem lies, of course, in the execution. Now, let me jump in here before I continue reading Dr. Pipe's article. And let me point out that you are dealing with a fundamentally different mindset when it is religious first and political second. In other words, you can see where, say, capitalism triumphs over communism. There is a deep-seated ideology. Much of it is birthed in atheism, but it is ultimately a political philosophy. Yes, ideological, but not primarily religious. Whereas Iran is a fundamentalist Muslim country. Iran on a national level is what ISIS is or Al-Qaeda is or the Taliban are in microcosm. Now, they're pretty big microcosm for that matter. They may be more extreme in certain ways, but the same fundamentalist Islamic mentality. Look, Al-Qaeda, Taliban, ISIS, these are all part of the lasting fruit of the Iranian revolution, the Islamic revolution of the late 1970s under the influence of Ayatollah Khomeini. There is no question that the radical Islam that we see around the world is a direct fruit, not only from this, but this is the powerful birthing point of it. A lot of it goes back to the 30s and the Muslim Brotherhood in Palestine and the leadership of Haj Amin al-Husseini, who was a radical Muslim and a friend of Adolf Hitler. And they shared in the same values and goals, wanted to see the destruction of the Jewish people. But the more recent push forward with radical Islam is the Iranian Revolution. That's very easy to see. And the influence of Khomeini. So we see this influence still a stronghold in Iran. The most powerful man in Iran is not the president, but the supreme Muslim leader, Ayatollah Khamenei. He's the number one guy, and he's still affirming, yes, death to Israel, death to America. He's affirming these things. And the idea of you're now going to negotiate, now, okay, now you're just part of the international community. They don't want to be part of the international community. They want to change the international community.
It's the Line of Fire with your host, Dr. Michael Brown. Get into the Line of Fire now by calling 866-34-TRUTH. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
Because America negotiated from a position of strength and principle, the Islamic Republic of Iran will not develop a nuclear weapon.
I hope President Obama's right. I certainly hope that. But from the criticism coming, from the staunch opposition from Israel, why would Israel oppose this? I mean, think of it. Why would Israel oppose this so dogmatically? What does Israel have to lose if there's a good agreement with Iran? Nothing. 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 And yeah, that's Soviet propaganda music in the background. That was hopefully that's not how this ends up looking like one of these disastrous political choices. Look, you think Israel wants to try to take out the nuclear reactors the way they did with Iraq in the early 1980s, something for which the whole world ended up being grateful, I think. Do you think they want to do that? Do you think they want to then provoke an all-out war with Iran when they're surrounded by hostile nations and terrorist groups and things like that right on their immediate borders? I mean, their immediate neighbors, ISIS operating in Gaza and in Sinai and Hamas right there and other militant groups all around them. I mean, Syria, that's the immediate north border from Israel. You can shoot down from there to where the people are. you're now going to provoke a war with Iran. You think Israel wants to do that? Obviously not. You think Israel can handle economically all the repercussions of that? Obviously not. Not without some type of outside help. So why wouldn't Israel be endorsing this? If it was testable and verifiable and reliable, isn't there a famous history of Iran fudging on testing and investigating and examining? 866-34-TRUTH. So back to Daniel Pipes. The conduct of the Iran nuclear negotiations has been wretched, with the Obama administration inconsistent, capitulating, exaggerating, and even deceitful. It forcefully demanded certain terms, then soon after conceded these same terms. With parents doing that, that's called bad parenting. When you're negotiating life and death stuff, that's coming. That's called bad negotiating, especially when life and death matters are involved. It forcefully demanded certain terms, then soon after conceded these same terms. Secretary of State John Kerry implausibly announced that we have absolutely knowledge of what the Iranians have done until now in their nuclear program, and therefore have no need for inspections to form a baseline. As Pipes asks, how can any adult, much less a high official, make such a statement? The administration misled Americans about its own concessions. After the November 2013 Joint Plan of Action, it came out with a fact sheet which Tehran said was inaccurate. Guess who was right? The Iranians. In brief, the U.S. government has shown itself deeply untrustworthy. The agreement signed today ends the economic sanctions regime, permits the Iranians to hide much of their nuclear activities, lacks enforcement in case of Iranian deceit, and expires in slightly more than a decade. Two problems particularly stand out. The Iranian path to nuclear weapons has been eased and legitimated. Tehran will receive a signing bonus of some U.S. dollars, $150 billion. That greatly increases its abilities to aggress in the Middle East and beyond. This is, from everything I understand, insanity. Putting $150 billion into the hands of one of the world's foremost sponsors of terrorism, if not the foremost sponsor, with the potential of this going directly to nuclear arms? The United States alone, not to speak of the P5 plus one countries as a whole, have vastly greater economic and military power than the Islamic Republic of Iran, making this one-sided concession ultimately a bafflement of the administration's accumulated foreign policy mistakes in the last 6 years. None have been catastrophic for the United States, not the Chinese building islands, the Russians taking Crimea, or the collapse into civil wars of Libya, Yemen, Syria, and Iraq, but the Iran deal has the makings of a catastrophe. Attention now shifts to the U.S. Congress to review today's accord, arguably the worst treaty, not just in American history or modern history, but ever. Friends, when you hear words like this, when you hear words that are so extreme from someone like Daniel Pipes, all right, president of the Middle East Forum, he calls this arguably the worst treaty, not just in American history or modern history, but ever. He says Congress must reject this deal. When you hear words like this, you realize something's going on here. Republican senators and representatives have shown themselves firm on this topic. Will the Democrats rise to the occasion and provide the votes for a veto override? They need to feel the pressure. I certainly hope and pray they will feel the pressure. 866-34-TRUTH. Let's go to clip number three, President Obama speaking about this deal. Clip number three.
This deal is not built on trust. It is built on verification. Inspectors will have 24/7 access to Iran's key nuclear facilities. Put simply, the organization responsible for the inspections, the IAEA, will have access where necessary, when necessary. That arrangement is permanent. And the IAEA has also reached an agreement with Iran to get access that it needs to complete its investigation into the possible military dimensions of Iran's past nuclear research.
All right. Not based on trust. Why? Because we can't trust them? And we can't verify certain things? I hope and pray that Congress looks at this carefully. Yeah, let it be a big slap in the face of our administration. But we're dealing with people's lives here. We're dealing with human lives. We're dealing with potentially millions of lives. There's nothing to fool with. 866-34-TRUTH. We'll be coming back with your calls in a moment. But I was so excited to do this yesterday. I have been waiting for weeks and weeks till we agreed it was the right time. So my new book, Outlasting the Gay Revolution, Where Homosexual Activism is Really Going, and How to Turn the Tide. Couldn't ask for a better book at this time and season. Timely, would you not agree? It will infuse you with hope, with courage, with faith. The book will be out in early September. So what we're doing now is giving you the opportunity to pre-order a signed and numbered copy. We'll do this for the first 100, maybe 200, depending on the number and the demand. But we only do this at the beginning. We don't do this 6 months down the line or a year or 5 years later. It's only the first printing, when it comes off the press, the first printing. We take the first books we get and we number them. We number them. We start there, and then I will personally sign them to you and put a scripture reference in for you. So it's kind of a collector's item. It's a beautiful hardcover, just under 300 pages. It will show you how gay activism has within it the seeds of self-destruction and give you 8 long-lasting principles. If Jesus doesn't come first, this is how we will outlast the gay revolution. So, $50 postage paid. It's your way of standing with us, and it's our way of sowing into you something very special. Call now to order. Earlier you order, better number you get. 1-800-278-9978. Order multiple copies if you like as gifts for friends. 1-800-278-9978. One more time, that's 1-800-278-9978. Or go to askdrbrown.org.
It's The Line of Fire with your host, activist, author, international speaker, and theologian, Dr. Michael Brown. Your voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution. Get into The Line of Fire now by calling 866-34-TRUTH. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
866-34-TRUTH, that's the number to join in the conversation about America's deal with Iran, which I really hope Congress will shoot down and veto. There's an article from Ari Sofer on Israel National Radio. As reactions for and against the deal signed with Iran Tuesday morning continue to pour in, Israeli Education Minister and Jewish Home Party head Naftali Bennett took Israel's case against the deal to the international media. In an interview with a notably hostile, even antagonistic BBC anchor, is anyone surprised? Bennett outlined perhaps the most glaring hole in the deal, the fact that Iran will receive nearly a month's notice prior to any inspections of nuclear sites, ample time to hide evidence of illegal bomb-making activity. What? Look, you have two athletes, all right? They're going to be competing in the Olympic Games. They're going to be in a boxing match or something. And you say, okay, there's going to be random drug testing. That means at any time over the course of a year, whatever it is leading up to the competition, the event, officials can come in and demand a urine sample or blood sample, whatever it is they're going to take, so that the person doesn't know if they're taking illegal drugs. They don't have time to get them out of their system. If you think your kid might be using drugs and you think your kid might be hiding drugs in his or her bedroom, you don't say, "Right, I'm giving you a week's notice and then I'm going to come and search your room." No, when that kid's out, as much as you hate to do it, you search that room because you're concerned that they're using drugs or dealing drugs or keeping drugs there. A month notice? Here's what Bennett said. Here's the thing. In order to go and make an inspection, you have to notify the Iranians 24 days in advance. That's a farce. Of course, in the 24 days, they're going to clean up the facility, get away with the inspections, and continue with what they do. Imagine a local police station raiding a drug baron and telling him a month in advance that we're going to raid you. You cannot have verifiable inspections if you have to notify them in advance. Then they can object, and then there's a committee. This is not serious. Bennett further noted that initially world powers had made surprise inspections a deal breaker before quietly abandoning an apparently crucial demand. It was supposed to be surprise inspections, but there's no surprise here anymore. Deflecting attempts by his sneering interviewer to goad him, including an attempt to draw him in on Israel's own alleged nuclear weapons program, Bennett added that the deal was essentially a repeat performance of the failed diplomatic efforts to prevent North Korea from obtaining nuclear weapons. I'll remind you that the West signed a deal with North Korea, said it would make the world a safer place, and of course, all the world's words evaporated. North Korea acquired nuclear weapons. This is a rerun of North Korea, except one that is in many ways much more dangerous in its potential. Wake up time. You say, okay, Mike, there's got to be something else going on. Why would America make this arrangement? Well, when you work for years and years, and this has been a major priority, and you are now going to show the civilized way. Remember our president's expectations, his speech in Cairo, using even Muslim terminology, speaking of when Islam was revealed and things like that, that President Obama and America, will now be loved by the Muslim world, will now be accepted by the Muslim world, will now be looked at as a real partner because President Bush was so hated by the Muslim world and invading Iraq and Afghanistan and all these things, and we'll show a new tone. Didn't work, did it? America's still hated by the Muslim world. President Obama's still hated by the Muslim world, despite what he attempted to do, because he's missing the point. And that's not the way that things are going to change. So, look, President Clinton pushed hard for a peace agreement between the Palestinians and Israelis. You want to have this in your legacy. President Carter, his legacy. President Obama, his legacy. This is going to be a catastrophic legacy. If this is his legacy, from everything I can see and from the reports I'm reading and from the protests worldwide by Israel and Friends of Israel and other scholars, this is a disastrous policy. This would be a disaster. Well, bad enough legacy already, sad to say, tragic to say. But this would add ugly fuels to the fire. Right, I'm going to come back and go straight to the phones. If you want to weigh in, if you support this deal, if you think we're being unfair, 866-34-TRUTH.
It's the Line of Fire with your host, Dr. Michael Brown, your voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
We keep on hearing that it's a verifiable sanction regime. But here's the thing. In order to go and make an inspection, you have to notify the Iranians 24 days in advance. That's a farce.
Yeah, again, that's a farce. Naftali Bennett making the case very plain. When you cave in, when you cave in on these things, when you say, you know, you have to have surprise inspections, well, that's not acceptable. Okay, we'll do it. You're right. Something's wrong. Something's wrong. When the sanctions are lifted, when the sanctions have been working, the nation's under pressure, and they're not happy with the leadership because of the sanctions. Many Iranians not happy with the leadership. Sanctions were working and stopping Iran from moving forward as quickly as it wanted to. Now you lift them and give a $150 billion bonus. 866-34-TRUTH. Let's go to Huntersville, North Carolina. Ann, welcome to the Line of Fire.
Hi, Dr. Brown. I commend you for your courage, your usual courage. And you're right. Israel's right. And what I'm going to say is probably going to be politically incorrect. But a part of Islam, in their Quran, they are told to get their agenda, furthered, even including lying. That is part of their religion. You know, Obama, I feel, is a closet Muslim. I mean, it's so obvious. It's what he does speaks so loud we can't hear what he's saying. So the dumbing down of the USA has been very effective, but I do see the father of lies active in all of this. And, I think, unfortunately, we're being duped by all this rhetoric and grandstanding that he's doing right now, Obama's doing, and it's just, you're right, this legacy is tarnished, is faulty. Unfortunately, we just don't have a very noble leader. I wish, unfortunately, we had someone like Netanyahu.
Yeah, but. Again, and of course, having just come back from Israel, you're reminded that, yeah, that Prime Minister Netanyahu is a strong leader in many ways, but far from a perfect leader, and he has his critics there. And look, I really regret, from the heart, I truly regret the fact that I could not rejoice in President Obama's presidency. I really regret it. I really wanted to, and it's something I'm not able to do for many obvious reasons. That being said, I take President Obama's word. He identifies as a Christian. I don't think he knows the Lord or is born again. But he was raised in an Islamic country, so he's much more sympathetic to Islam and identifies with it in certain ways. But from everything I've read, again, ask the question, if this was a good deal, why wouldn't Israel embrace it? If this was a good deal, why is Congress so skeptical of it? If this is really going to stop Iran from getting a nuclear weapon, if this is really going to stop Iran from funding world terror, is that even being considered? Iran's massive funding of terrorism around the world. Here, let me throw this out. Thank you for the call, Ann. Thanks for being candid. 866-34-TRUTH. Let me throw this out for you, all right? When you hear of American troops dying in Iraq or in Afghanistan now, when you hear about that, being attacked by this group or that group, many times, it is Iranian funding and Iranian training behind it. The taking of many American lives, many Americans who died in Iraq died as a result of Iranian warfare, Iranian training, Iranian funding. All right? We're not giving them a $150 billion bonus. By the way, where are we getting the money to do that? I thought we were heavily in debt. That's another point. 866-34-TRUTH. We've got live talk radio, so you can agree with me or disagree with me. We go to Fort Worth, Texas. Roosevelt, welcome to the Line of Fire.
Yes, sir. How are you this afternoon?
Doing very well, thank you.
Yeah, I'm agreeing with the president, and I think everybody's forgot about the 8 years that we had with George Bush. And second of all, Are you willing to send your son, your daughter, your grandson, your granddaughter to war with Iran because Israel wants to devastate their facilities? You understand? I think not. You know, and it's the only thing that hasn't been brought up yet, and that's the fact that it's going to create a war. You ready to go to war?
So, Roosevelt, let me just understand this. First, what does this have to do with President Bush? I'm not getting that. No one's forgetting. He gets criticized to this day, but I don't understand. If President Roosevelt, hang on. Roosevelt, hang on. Roosevelt, whoa. You didn't call a talk, did you? You didn't call the reason, did you? You didn't call a listen. Wow. I'm really disappointed, sir. If President Obama, on his own, makes a horrific decision that will endanger millions of people, including Americans, what's that got to do with George Bush? That's number one. Number two, why would Israel risk a massive war with Iran by trying to take out its nuclear capabilities unless it's concerned that Iran wants to destroy Israel? Iran is on record saying it stands for the destruction of Israel. Iran is on record. They chant death to Israel and then burn Israeli flags in the streets, and they chant death to America. What, sir, if they had nuclear capability that could get their nuclear bombs here? Wow. This sounds like anything but a reaction based on facts and based on truth. And more one based on emotional rhetoric. I'm very disappointed, sir. You ready to call and talk? Great. But that means it's got to go two ways. So the phone lines are always open for you to call back in the future, sir. That means when someone wants to raise a point to you, you allow it to be raised. 866-34-TRUTH. That's disappointing. We go to Winston-Salem, North Carolina. Stephen, welcome to the Line of Fire.
Hello, Dr. Mousy. There's a lot of things that I don't think they're really understanding. One, you know, the whole deal is about decreasing the number of arms, first of all. Two, I'm kind of nervous talking on the phone. This is the first time.
No, we're just the two of us talking. We're good.
Okay. But, you know, I'm kind of on defense for this whole. On defense, not defense.
Yeah, I understand. But here's the question. Why do you think many congressmen are very, very upset with this? Why do you think Israel is protesting it? Do you think it's a good idea that Iran gets 24 days' notice before an inspection?
Well, it's kind of hard to take down a nuclear reactor within that amount of time.
Can you hide things? Are you able to hide things in 24 days?
No,
why give him 24 days? Why give him 10 days? Why not just say we're showing up? If you've got nothing to hide. Here, remember being a kid when your mommy says, did you eat the cookie? When you ate the cookie, you keep your mouth closed because you still got, you know, the gook on your teeth. Mommy, I didn't eat the cookie. When you didn't eat the cookie, you say, Mommy, I didn't eat the cookie. Look at my hands. Look at my mouth. I didn't eat it. Let me ask you another question. Do you think we should be awarding Iran for allegedly saying they won't build a nuclear bomb or they're going to postpone it? Do you think we should be rewarding them with $150 billion of aid when they are one of the premier funders of terror worldwide?
Well, I agree with that. We shouldn't be giving them a whole lot of money.
Well, we are. They got $150 billion. Yeah.
I mean, I do agree with that, but
The thing is, if it worked, I'd be all for it. In other words, everybody with their head screwed on right, sir. And look, I appreciate you being on the fence. That's fair. You know, evaluate it, think it through, listen to both sides. But let me say this: everybody with their head screwed on right wants Iran to not have nuclear bombs, from Israel to Saudi Arabia to America. So if this was a viable way to stop it, and to stop them from funding terror, great. But it seems to be the exact opposite, with all kinds of concessions. Thank you for calling 866-34-TRUTH. All right, Phone lines are jammed. I want to go right back to the phones on the other side of the break. Please take a moment. Go to my Facebook page. That's Ask Dr. Brown, Ask Dr. Brown on Facebook. If you just scroll down a little, you will see a link to a video that is going viral. Since I last announced it just, what, less than an hour ago or so, it's now reached almost 900,000 people on my Facebook page. It's been viewed 175,000 times. I mean, it's like more than double than it was an hour ago. What's the video about? Planned Parenthood director caught on tape selling aborted baby parts. Whoa. God help us.
The Line of Fire with your host, Dr. Michael Brown, your voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
I'm certainly not going to share with our enemies who are explicitly saying they're going to wipe Israel off the map. I'm not going to share our plans. I'll just remind everyone
that
not a long time ago, a deal with North Korea.
You're very happy to share your views about what's not happening and how a deal isn't right, but you're not able to tell us how you believe Israel was able to prevent Iran from acquiring nuclear weapons. So with statements like that issued into the public domain, what are we supposed to read from that if you're not going to back it up with telling us exactly what you're going to do?
Well, you're supposed to understand that a country that's surrounded with Hezbollah in the north, Syria in the north, ISIS on the east and Hamas on the south, we're the sole democracy in the most dangerous place in the world. We're going to defend ourselves.
That's right. Naftali Bennett with the fairly hostile BBC announcer, 866-34-TRUTH, talking about the deal with Iran. We go to Trophy Club, Texas. Andrea, welcome to the Line of Fire.
Hi there. Thank you for taking my call.
You're welcome.
My concern is, of course, this is totally unacceptable, and my frustration as an American is most Americans didn't want this to go through anyway. But it doesn't matter what we say or because no one listens to us. I feel like our opinions go on deaf ears.
Well, here's what we have to hope, Andrea, is that there are enough congressional officials who will recognize this is wrong, who will recognize the folly of it, who will recognize the importance of our standing with Israel, and who won't bow down to political pressure. Instead, we'll tell the president, no, we don't accept this, we veto this, and let the whole thing be gutted in that respect. Hopefully elected officials will do what the people elected them want to do. Hopefully. We go to High Point, North Carolina. No, we don't. Let's go to Lexington, North Carolina. Gerald, welcome to the Line of Fire.
Yes. Why don't we just tell Iran? Here's a thought, okay? And I know you think I'm crazy on this one, but why don't we just tell Iran, say, Iran, we will do whatever we can to get along with you. We will trade with you, whatever, yada, yada, yada. But if you make one move in the direction of any threats whatsoever, we will wipe you off the face of the earth. Why don't we just tell them the same thing they're telling Israel?
Yeah, well, obviously, yeah, listen, Gerald, obviously that is kind of the hyper-military response. You know, the last thing we want is another war, obviously. The last thing we want is to be sending more troops over and losing American lives, in another part of the world.
About troops?
Right,
look,
I understand.
About troops. Not many ballistic missiles one submarine carries the United States. I mean,
yeah, I understand. But then, obviously, and I know you said, I'm going to think you're crazy. I mean, obviously, you're making a point saying, all right, you're going to say death to Israel, then we're saying death to Iran. You're going to refuse to do the right thing. You cross the line. We're gonna destroy you. Obviously, we don't just do that. Obviously, we're not going to repeat Hiroshima and Nagasaki on an even bigger level. Obviously, we're not. In other words, the whole world just blow up itself pretty quickly. But I understand what you're saying, which is fight fire with fire. 866-34-TRUTH. Jose Antonio in Dallas, welcome to the Line of Fire.
Yes, sir. My name is Jose Antonio Garcia. My former Marine, 17 years in the United States Marine Corps. I'm going to just say no to this nonsense Iran deal. I think what we should do is send any of these congressmen or anybody that supports any of this part of this deal, you give them $100, a brand new pair of sneakers, drop them in the middle of any of these ISIS or in Iran, and just get a little bit of hospitality of these Iranians. I guarantee you that will change their mind.
Yes. How do we do that? How do we change perceptions? How do we actually do that?
If anybody is out there and is listening to this radio station right now, you need to look at history. Look at history. Iran is nothing but evil. So all this nonsense about giving them more money, that's money that's going to come back and kill our own troops. So because I have these 17 years of military, experience, I think I know exactly what I'm talking about.
Yeah, let me just say this one thing, and bless you for your years of service and sacrifice, sir. I'm aware that there's a story that we don't hear, say from Iraq, about the good that the American troops have done and the help that they've provided and how the civilians were so grateful to them for so many things. Unfortunately, because of some of the ill-conceived strategies there under President Bush, And the forcing of a democracy on Iraq, and thinking that their military would be able to handle things in our absence, you know, we've created a lot of problems for the country, even though we meant well. But to the extent, and the military has been able to do this over the years, they get involved with the lives of people. And while you might have the perception that the country hates them, they're actually greatly appreciated for their sacrifice and for the good they bring. But if there's a way to overcome evil with good, if there's a way to change perceptions, if there's a way on the ground to make a difference, obviously do it. And one other thing to pray for, the church is growing rapidly, underground church in Iran. Who knows what God will do through that in the coming years. But thank you, sir, for the call. All right, we are out of time. But again, let me encourage you to visit the website AskDrBrown.org. We've got new articles coming out virtually every day, so check for latest articles when you're there at AskDrBrown.org. Check for latest videos. If you don't subscribe to our YouTube channel, please do. We're putting out new videos, 1, 2, 3 new videos a week. It can vary. We've posted some recent debates, some interviews. I took on Jon Stewart from Daily Show, Comedy Central. Got some excerpts from our radio show, just a lot of excellent stuff. And going viral, a video, we took some clips. You can watch the whole clip on LifeSite News, the whole video. We took some clips from a report. It's undercover where Planned Parenthood officials, Senior Director of Medical Services for Planned Parenthood Federation of America, talks about selling baby parts from aborted babies. Got to watch that, friends. All right. While you're at the website, just check on the homepage. Check right there. You'll see a video where I talk to you about our special resource offer this week. I'm so excited I get to announce it every day on the radio. My new book, which will be out early September, so it'll be here before you know it. We're counting less than 60 days now, getting close to 50 days. As soon as they come in, they're beautiful hardcover volumes. As soon as they come in, we will number the first 100, 200, 300 copies, depends on the demand. We'll number them, and then I will sign them with a scripture reference for you. $50, postage paid. It's your way of getting something special from us that is only done once in the history of a book, so it becomes kind of a collector's item. More importantly, it's going to get a very important book in your hands that will infuse you with hope and courage and vision. And it's your way of standing with us and helping us on the front lines of this countercultural Jesus revolution. Number to call, 1-800-278-9978. Call right now, 1-800-278-9978, or again on the website, AskDrBrown.org. My bottom line today, let's really pray for the American government to do the right thing when it comes to the Iranian deal, because it doesn't look like a good deal to me.